Welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And we are re-recording the intro, which this is something that really doesn't happen very often because I was not in game mode when we started. So had about a minute of really bad radio. And because we're not live, we have the luxury of saying, yep, control A, delete, and we're good. We're right back at it. But the show is called Fox on Sports. We will be renaming it. And when we get to show number 100, how far are we from that?
I believe this one is 94.
This is 94. So we have a solid 5 weeks. It's time.
Okay.
2 years in, it needs to be renamed. So we'll take suggestions. It doesn't mean we'll actually listen to them, but we will take suggestions. I don't want to put it up to the Harpoon softball guys because guaranteed we'd get something that we really don't want.
Exactly.
Yeah. Particularly after last night.
Yes.
So, I don't know. Last night, in case you missed it, and judging by the attendance, there's a strong chance you did.
Which is surprising. I mean, the tickets were free.
Tickets were free.
There was open seating in a prime location.
At Chubbuck Field, there were exactly two people at the game that weren't playing. So,
in addition to the umpires? not participating.
I'm not saying anything about them. Yeah, two people that weren't participating. The field conditions were wet. The grass was long. And unfortunately for our guys, we did not come out on top. Congratulations are in order to the boys of Cobra Kai.
Yes, the Yellow Squad.
Yep.
They earned it. They are the champs.
Back-to-back champs. We had those back in the day. I think we had 2011, 2012. We won back-to-back. But, yeah, the Cobra Kai guys, strong showing defensively, strong showing on offense, great base running, a lot of taking extra bases and realizing that, hey, the outfield's wet, the ball's going to stop, we may as well take advantage of it. But, and the other thing that I'll say that is very nice, although I was skeptical about it, we are done with the softball season the week of Labor Day.
It's, talk about unprecedented.
Right. I mean, last year, I think we were going until mid-October.
We were.
So, yeah. So we are done basically a month and a half earlier than we were last year, which as much as I enjoy seeing my buddies and being on the softball field, it's nice not to be dealing with frozen water behind second base at Chubbuck Field.
It's yet time to turn the page to another group of sports.
Yep.
The fall sports.
The fall sports. And with fall sports, we're going to welcome a couple guests who are fall sports coaches, but I wanted to ask you, because you had a much more storied athletic career than I did, coaches that influenced you along the way.
Well, all of the coaches that I had at the high school level and junior high were role models I stay in touch with, looked
Seriously?
Up to them. Yeah.
All of them.
Well, the ones that I had the longest, deepest relationship with were my junior high basketball coach.
Okay.
My high school basketball coach,
okay.
High school baseball coach. Two of those, every year we play in a fundraiser golf tournament for the high school, for the golf team and the basketball team.
Yep.
And so in that event, I typically play with my high school basketball coach and my junior high basketball coach and my high school baseball coach.
Seriously.
It's foursome, scramble, and the alums get together, and it's just a terrific time. So I always looked up to my coaches and took a lot of lessons from them, and it's really fun to then continue that relationship, be adults, be able to look back at those times, but still compete together now in a fun environment like a golf scramble.
So you're 40. How old are they?
The junior high basketball coach is about 70.
Okay.
And he is still really fit. I mean, he lifts weights every morning.
He's like Jack LaLanne.
And he's the perfect teammate for a golf scramble because he can play the senior tees. But
you think of this stuff.
Well, and not only that, but it's the team chemistry.
Yep.
But, he hits it like he's 45, 50 still because he's so in shape. And then the high school baseball coach, he's probably 55. But again, he teaches wellness. And so he's also really physically fit and active still. So it's a fun group.
So with those coaches, what are some of the lessons or why, you are from junior high, you're 2.5 decades. from high school, you're more than two decades removed. Why would those be people that, because, I mean, I look at myself and I, all right, the guys who were, I played basketball in junior high, have no reason to have any contact with the guy who was a coach. Honestly, this is horrible. I'm not even sure he's alive. And I think about my high school baseball coaches, whether it was the freshman team, JV, varsity, or wrestling in high school. I really don't have any occasion to be in contact with anybody, you know, as far as a mentoring level. So I would ask you, what has made those relationships long lasting?
Well, I think the first thing is their passion for the game, as much effort that they put into coaching and as seriously as they took it. I mean, what else can you ask for as a player? And so with the junior high coach in basketball, he had a military background, so he was no nonsense, very focused, but very passionate about teaching the game. And so there he is. He's a junior high teacher, and we'll talk to Coach Winning today, who's got that same background. He was because he was so serious and focused, and he demanded a lot. He could be a little bit tough on you, but I think that helped me grow. I can still remember it was a Christmas tournament, and I was, you know, one of the better players, but he was still hard on me. There was a play where in the open court, I let a guy get around me pretty easily. We get back to the bench and he's getting on me for the Matador defense. He said, "Do you know what that is? Do you know what Matador defense is?" And I said, "No, I don't." So he explained it. And sure enough, I made sure not to do it again because I didn't want to get that criticism at the bench. But so being hard on me, you know, helped me get better. And then the high school baseball coach, Coach Anthorn, he was one of those coaches that planned out practice, you know, basically down to the minute. And so he just, again, very focused, disciplined, and talking about every practice you're trying to get better and taking practice seriously to maximize your performance. And then the high school basketball coach, Coach Marks, he built a program that I look back on and really appreciate. And we're going to talk with Coach Winning about that too. And one of the things that stood out to me recently was I got this old binder. And what he did each year was he put these written goals together. And at the end of the year, he would give you written feedback. And it wasn't just like a sentence or two. It was like two pages. And so I had sort of forgotten the depth of the written evaluation he would give you. And I looked back at it a year or so ago, and it just jumped out at me like, wow, this coach who is a teacher, now he's an administrator, he put so much time and effort into building that program. And then you got to sort of expect it from year to year. You knew what you were going to get, and you knew that you were going to sit down with him, come up with individual goals, team goals, and you just felt like you were part of something bigger than you because he built such a program that was long-lasting.
And I think where your experience and mine were different is when you have, and it may be a West Coast, East Coast thing to a degree. It may be, I mean, I'm 5 years older than you are. I don't know how, I wouldn't define it as a generational thing. It sounds like the coaches that you had were slightly older as well than the ones that I had had. Where there wasn't that much age difference between us being 16 or 17 and a guy coaching who's 25 or 26, where he's still trying to find himself at that point. But it sounds like the experience that you had with coaches was you had coaches who were interested and invested in you as a person and your personal growth and personal development, and ultimately were determined that they were going to teach you a lesson. And I don't mean I'm going to really teach you a lesson, not like that.
Right.
You know, not like parenting. But it's more of they were going to teach you a lesson, and they were going to teach you a way to be and behave, and how to act, and kind of bigger lessons than you would have learned on a diamond or a court.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what it's hard to remember going through it. If you realize that at the time, probably I did. I'd like to think that I did, but certainly looking back on it, yeah, that's what I take away from it.
Right. I think back to playing in high school, and I had some good coaches who were fun guys, and you'd learn things about toughness and you'd learn things about mental toughness. But like, I remember wrestling in high school, I was tough to defy the coaches because I didn't want to give in to whatever they were putting out there. And it wasn't that sort of toughness wasn't a I'm being tough for a purpose. The toughness was I'm going to do this because you don't think that any of us can. So I'm going to, you're going to tell me this is going to be the hardest practice. We're going to do however many pushups in an hour. I'm going to do every one of those pushups with you. And like, and who knows, maybe that was the goal. Maybe the goal was to do that in order to gain strength, in order to be a better wrestler. But hey, you know, at the end of the day, I was no, Dan Gable or anything like that. I was a average to below average high school wrestler in Southern California, which is not exactly a wrestling hotbed. And you look at baseball and, you know, baseball, there are a lot of lessons you can learn as far as being on time, respect, listening, executing. And some of those were, you know, may have been missed along the way. And you have to learn them somewhere else in your life. But sports really and truly can be a great way to teach people a lot of lessons, and more importantly, to teach sort of intangible things that really go a long way, like toughness, and not just physical toughness, mental toughness, and bouncing back from adversity. And we'll go through some of those topics with Coach Winning as well. I'm reading a book right now called Grit, and basically this the author went through her experience with her father. She is a daughter of Chinese immigrants, and her dad was kind of continually putting her down as far as intelligence level, things like that. And it was how she has gotten to where she is. And she looked back and said, well, yeah, I got to where I am. My dad told me that I wasn't a genius. Okay. How did I get to where I am? What intangibles did I have that got me there? And that basically turned into her career. And, you know, anytime you read a book like that, you start diving into rabbit holes. One of the rabbit holes I'll allude to in the interview with Coach Winning is Anson Dorrance at the University of North Carolina, who coached Mia Hamm and has coached countless other NCAA Division I All-Americans. But he has his 12 core values for his program that, believe it or not, these are D1 women's soccer players who each year you have to learn three core values. And it's not learning the value. It's also learning a quotation that goes along with the value so that you, during any practice, can be called upon and tested to say, all right, core value number one, and you spout off whatever the core value is and the accompanying quote.
Well, those sort of systems are just, it's a real gift if you are fortunate enough to be on a team with a coach like that. And we hear it throughout society, like that coach or Coach Wooden at UCLA, the pyramid of success. And you hear about his players still quoting the pyramid of success, living by it in their daily lives. And you're right. It's as you're growing up, if you're fortunate enough to have a coach who's going to teach you those lessons, then it's just a benefit because you're learning the life lessons while you're playing sports. If you don't have those coaches, you have to learn it somewhere else.
Yeah. And oftentimes you learn it by failing and figuring out, okay, I have sports is helpful in that it gives you the opportunity to fail without really, particularly at a lower level, whether it's you're a kid playing or junior high or even high school, you fail and it's without a severe penalty. If you're playing Division I college football and you fail and you're kicking a field goal and your team loses a game or you drop a pass or something like that, okay, now that's a more severe penalty. And it continues as you work on up the ladder. If you're a professional athlete, all right, you fail and now you're losing contract dollars. But the nice thing about sports is it imparts some of those life lessons to you, provided that you're willing to learn them. And that really is the key. It's, you know, I feel like a broken record. I keep saying it to my kids. The game is the best. The game teaches you what you need to know. And the game, if you have a great game and you go 4 for 4 and don't make it out and catch every ball that's hit to you, the chances that you're going to learn something are far slimmer than if you misplay a ball, than if you strike out, you know, on a curveball away. Okay, how do I figure out how to hit that pitch the next time? And then you can focus on the weaknesses and becoming a more complete player. So anyway, we will stop philosophizing. Is that even a word? What am I even saying? It's Friday morning, man. I need breakfast. You're listening to, we'll come right back and we'll be joined by Coach Michelle Winning of the Bedford High.
What? We'll get some of her philosophies.
Yes.
On winning.
I don't know why I can't say those words today, man.
Winning on winning.
Winning on winning. I like it. Maybe we'll write a book. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. While it is still called Fox on Sports before we change the name to something else in like four more shows, we are joined by Bedford High girls soccer coach Michelle Winning. Coach, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much.
Hey, great to have you. Good start to the season, but of course you come off of last year where you had a great team, an experienced team, and a couple big-time seniors who have since graduated and moved out of the program, Brianna and Shayna. How hard is it to replace talent like those two when they move on, either graduating or move on to the next level of college?
Yeah, players like that, they're not really replaceable, I don't think. A player like Bree Coco comes in, a two-time All-American. You can't just plug one girl into that spot. So we just try to work to find combinations of players to fill those gaps and hope that, you know, three players sometimes can fill what Bree did for us last year. Same thing with Shayna in the middle. And then we're always pleasantly surprised that girls like Gabby DeAngelis step up and then have grown so much and progressed that kind of step into those roles. So I think we're doing an all right job filling those gaps for now, but, you know, those players are always missed.
And Coach, two of those girls were part of your captains, the group of captains you had. Have you named captains for this season?
Yeah, we have. There are Ellie Flynn, Gabby DeAngelis, and Mackenzie McEachern.
So they're taking over the leadership. That's great. We recognize those names. Now, you're off to a good start. A couple of convincing wins here, 5-1 over Portsmouth and 5-0 over Winnicunnet. What's the mood of the team so far with that start?
Yeah, it's great. They're just having fun. It's really high energy. They're excited. You know, we'll see in the next couple weeks when we start getting tested, we'll see what the team's really made of when, you know, we're down a goal or we're only up one. But for now, they're having a great time and they're super fun to watch out there. They're just making combinations and doing their thing.
Joined by Bedford High girls soccer coach Michelle Winning. Coach, you have some new players and you had a few players last year who really took a lot of the spotlight. Who have been some of the bright spots so far this season?
We've had a bunch, actually. I think, I've brought up Gabby DeAngelis a couple times. She's really stepped in and taken control of the midfield. And around her, she's got Ellie Flynn, who's just a ball winner and works hard. Olivia Tulin, we have her in a couple different positions, and she's matched up with Mackenzie. So those combinations of players have been doing phenomenal this year. And we got lucky enough to get a transfer, Ava Suminovic. She came in as a transfer, and she's doing great in the back, being a leader back there.
Yeah, it's always interesting. That's like the free agent signing of the high school and college ranks when you get a transfer who comes into the program.
Yeah, as a senior who can bring leadership, it's fantastic, especially in the back where we lost, you know, four girls back there. So that's been key.
Coach, you mentioned Olivia matching up with Mackenzie. You're talking about making connections offensively?
Yeah. Yep. They're doing really well together up there.
So that reminds me, because Mackenzie stood out last year with her speed. We were all just wowed by it. So in terms of when you say matching up with her, it reminds me, I wanted to ask you, is there anybody on the team, anybody on the coaching staff, anybody on the state that can mark her and keep up with her speed?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I know the staff can't keep up with her. And on our team, her feet are just so quick. Even just playing in our scrimmages, she beats people all the time. But people have her number in the state right now, so it's really great that she's marked up, but we've been able to kind of work around that. In the last game, we had five different girls score goals, and we have different girls making assists, so our attack is pretty unpredictable right now, which is really fun.
Yeah, when you're scoring 10 goals in two games, five each, like that makes all the difference in the world. And a lot of it has to do, you keep using the word fun. Your program has a strong culture, and it's clear that the culture within that program starts at the top. Who are some of the coaching role models or playing role models that have inspired you or still inspire you?
I've been thinking about this one, and one name comes to mind, Bill Whitmore, who used to be the AD here in Bedford. And he gave me my start back in 2002 in Concord. And our program hasn't always had this culture of fun and success. It's gone through some ups and downs, and he's one guy. He took a chance on me. I didn't have any experience, and I really admire the fact that he was willing to stick his neck out there and just say, you know what, I'm going to give this girl a shot and see what she can do. And then he came to Bedford, and when the program hit some dips, he stood by me and was like, hey, how can we change this around, and how can we get this culture to be something that is really great and people that are proud of? And he and I worked together, made some changes, and that he's one person that I think has always kind of had my back and always had the best interest of this Bedford High program in mind. And, you know, so I still kind of am in contact with him a little bit. And he's been super helpful to me. And then beyond that, I really feed off other coaches in the state. Meg Young from Exeter, who is a really good friend of mine. You know, we have some banter back and forth, and we have fun just coaching against each other and then coaching with each other to stick out games. And that all transfers. The girls see us friendly, and they see what it means to be rivals, but come together and have this positive relationship. So it's a mix and match of things. But, you know, Bill's been great. Corey's great now as an AD. And people like that that just kind of stand behind you and support you are people that I look up to.
Joined by Bedford High girls soccer coach Michelle Winning. And I'm going to call an audible. And I guess it's a good thing I'm not the quarterback for the Packers, because I wouldn't be able to do that. But with the team, and you talk about the relationships that your players have and relationships they have with other teams, obviously at this point, everybody from the age, I don't know, maybe nine on up is playing some kind of travel something. And it's not limited to the kids who are in your town. You're playing with kids from surrounding towns or surrounding regions. How much do you find that that's changed things over the last few years as far as players and knowing who they're up against when they're between the lines?
Yeah, and there are times when, like, I'll think that I'm going into a game blind, and the girls can give me some insight on players that they know. And it's a little bit more now than it had been, but even when I was growing up, I played against Meg Young, and we always kind of knew, you know, our teammates that we played with and then played against for high school. It's fun. It's always been that way, I think. And there are more clubs now, so more girls have that experience. It's really cool to see these girls battle it out on the field and then after the game go and give each other hugs and touch base and say, hey, how's it going? How's your season? It builds some respect between the teams, I think. It's really good to watch and to be a part of.
It's I found it interesting when I was coaching in the spring, and you have one kid who's played on a travel team who's seen a couple guys, and okay, now all of a sudden he knows how to pitch them. It was unique, and I it wasn't something that I was expecting. It certainly made it interesting. So
And sometimes the girls know more than I do in terms of, oh, that girl's, you know, keeper to her left, and we talk about those things, and I have no problem having my players say, hey, yeah, coach, this is what we know about these couple girls. We play against them all the time, because I can get out there and scout, but I don't see as much as them sometimes.
And it's impressive when you have players who are 14, 15 years old who've picked that stuff up.
Yeah, it really is. I like it. It's fun.
Joined by Michelle Winning from the Bedford High Girls Soccer Program. The University of North Carolina head soccer coach has his 12 core values that all of his players are expected to memorize and follow. What are some of the core values of the Bedford High program?
The first one is respect. I feel like there's a ton of respect for each other in the program. I feel like they have a ton of respect for the coaches and the referees, and they know that that's the expectation here, that, you know, we're not going to give people a hard time. We're going to have sportsmanship, and we're going to respect everybody around us and our spaces. And just being a good teammate, you know, being a part of this club is being, or this team is being someone who's supportive of each other. And they're going to be fighting for positions, but it's not about that. And this season, more than any, I've seen girls up on the bench that are standing behind, supportive, even if they're not getting playing time. They're in it, and they're part of it, and they realize that whatever their role is, important, and they should be proud to be on the field because we're a competitive team, and it's really a good program to be a part of at this point.
It certainly seems like it is. We're with Michelle Winning, the head coach of the Bedford High girls soccer program. And for anybody who's in town who's had an eighth grader or anyone who's been one, it seems like the year really gets defined by one word, cardigan. And you have an opportunity to be, for better or for worse, to be surrounded by a bunch of eighth graders for a few days. How does a trip like that allow you to impart some of the coaching wisdom to your students?
I think it allows me to hold kids to a standard and push them to a point where they didn't think that they could accomplish something. You kind of set that bar and say, you can do this, you got this, and you push them beyond their limits just enough for them to feel success and then feel like they really overcame something. And I think that's a huge part of coaching is to manage, like, how far can you push your team before they kind of break, you know, and get them to that level that they don't think they can get to. And that's how I approach cardigan is you take the challenges that each individual student is dealing with and see if you can push them just to that point to let them get beyond it without letting them break. It's the best. Cardigan's a great experience for the kids, and every one of them comes back learning something about themselves. And I think that's part of being on a team as well.
Well, that's later on this month. Today, you have more pressing matters. The girls' soccer team taking on Merrimack over at the GPS Fields, and we appreciate you taking time out of the busy day to come join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. We will we'll catch up with you soon as the season wears on, and as always, take care. Enjoy the day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Coach.
Bye-bye.
That was Bedford High girls' soccer coach Michelle Winning, who I hope wasn't waiting for me to say goodbye. I just may have just hung up on her, but that's okay. As always, great to hear from her. You can hear the enthusiasm in her voice as far as the soccer program goes, but you also hear it as far as teaching goes. And I had seen it and seen her on the field and the amount of passion she brings there. And then I'm in open house yesterday, and you can hear it in the classroom too, which, hey, it's not often if you're not playing that varsity sport that you get that experience from a passionate, engaged coach, and it really makes a difference.
Yeah, and she's so genuine, and it's fun to hear her talk about those values of respect and sportsmanship and teamwork, and we've seen that on the field from her teams in recent years, and look forward to it more this year. We're going to be broadcasting some of their games on BCTV, so can't wait to get out there and see her squad in action.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Matt Toulin had asked me about whether we were doing any games on radio or on TV.
And yeah, we'll do some TV games.
It's good to know. I had asked him if he might be interested in filling in, doing a little bit of color commentary. He politely declined.
He wants to focus on watching.
He wants to cheer on his kid.
Yeah.
And I can't really blame him.
No.
So, but anyway, thanks, Coach Winning, for joining us. And we'll take a quick break. Come right back. You're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. I'm Lauren Fox.
And I'm Andrew Hansen.
And it's Friday, and you're listening on Saturday or Sunday or maybe later. I don't know.
We're in the time machine.
We're just to get me a DeLorean. It's parked outside. So it is school started. Like, it's awesome. I miss having my kids around all the time, but I enjoy the fact that I can actually get work done. Weird, strange concept, but with school being back, of course, we just heard from Michelle Winning. Soccer is back. Football is back. And what are you laughing at?
No, just, yeah. We're doing an extra time machine
right
this week.
Because I just keep teleporting back.
Sometimes, we only have one segment for the whole show.
Right.
Oftentimes, we have two.
Yes.
Today, we have about five.
Yeah, Harry's going to kill us. Sorry, dude. Yeah, we know you can use the editing software. We just want you to prove it today.
Yes.
Prove it, pal.
Yes,
show
exactly.
Me that you can use Adobe Audition.
But it's Friday, and the show's on Saturday. The football game was last night.
And if you're sitting on 101, chances are you're probably still sitting there. Yes.
So we're going to do a football
we're
preview.
We're doing a football preview of something that's already happened.
Yes.
It's like the Twilight Zone of sports. Talk to me. You happen to talk to Coach Zach Matthews yesterday. Dude, I can't even. Like, we're in this weird space-time continuum where nothing makes sense. You talk to them on Thursday. They play the game on Friday, but the show is airing on Saturday. We don't know what happened yet, even though you're listening to the show now.
Exactly.
Yep. Try to get your brain around that. Ooh. This whole thing is just a complete simulation anyway. It really doesn't matter. Anyway, so you talked to Coach Matthews Thursday, and you realized a variety of things about him, the program. One thing that you brought up first off was that he sounds a lot like Corey Parker.
That did strike me. So it seems like a good fit.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, you're going to hear the interview here in a minute, and I asked him about the team goals, getting to know the team because he's a first-year coach.
Yep.
And I just enjoyed the interview, his focus. He seems... to me, and you can listen and tell us if you agree, he seems so grounded, but also, you know, hungry. And when he talks about the goals of winning the division, you know, winning the home games, winning the division, and having that ultimate prize in mind, which of course would be another championship, even though that's a tall order, because as we talk about, they lost a lot of skill position players, a lot of leadership. And he's a new coach, so everybody's getting to know each other. And so for any program that went through the loss of those seniors, it would be very difficult to expect that you're going to get back to the state championship game. And then you add on the fact that he's a new coach, it's just a high bar to try to reach. So it's fun to hear him have those goals, but to be grounded at the same time and humble and sort of be thinking, well, let's win the home games, and that'll lead to winning the division and on and on and on, one level of success leads to another.
Yeah, the more you listen, the more you learn. Whether you're listening to him coaching there or you're listening to Dabo Swinney talking about the Clemson team, all of these coaches have been influenced by somebody at some point, and nobody is going into it completely cold. Like, they're going into things having picked up things along the way, and whether it's the setting reasonable, manageable goals for a team in the hopes that your players can then achieve them. But really the hardest thing to do when you're brand new and you're walking into a program where it was a charismatic coach and it was a guy who had a very good football background in Derek Stank, now all of a sudden you're walking into this program and you don't have a whole lot of time. You got to put your stamp on the program pretty quickly.
That's right. And so again, it's Saturday right now. The opener was last night. So we'll talk about the opener next week in terms of what we saw on the field, but let's go to the interview now. Stay tuned here through the break. Come back and listen to our interview with Coach Zach Matthews of the Bedford High School football team.
You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.
Welcome back to Bedford 105.1. This is Andrew Hansen, and I'm excited to be joined today by the new coach of the Bedford Bulldogs football team. It's Zach Matthews. Coach, welcome to Bedford. And tell us how the transition has gone for you so far as you've taken over the primary leadership role of the program.
First of all, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you having me on. Talking about the transition, I think things have gone really well. I think anytime you change leadership in a program, it can be nerve-wracking for kids, I think, especially. And so coming in, I wanted to try to make the transition as smooth as possible for the kids. Lucky enough for us, we were able to keep three coaches on staff that we had on staff last year, which I really feel like helps bridge the gap kind of between two forms of leadership. And, I think our kids have really adjusted well as the preseason has gone on. I think the first couple of days of practice, the kids are trying to feel you out to see what your expectations are as coaches. You know, they're trying to figure out, okay, what positions do we want kids in? Where do we see this person fitting into our scheme? But coming to this week of prep for the Wyndham game, I really feel like the kids are comfortable and we were able to just kind of focus on football, which is all you can ask for.
Now, Coach, it's a big challenge for you taking over a new team. And of course, team had a lot of success last season winning the state championship. And then the hard part is the team graduated a lot of the leadership, the players who performed well on the field. So as you take over the team, what are some of your primary goals for this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost, obviously, was to start to develop some personal relationships with these kids. I think it's difficult to come into a season, and you just don't have that personal relationship with the kids yet, and that only really comes from spending time with one another and working together on the field. So first and foremost, one of my first goals in taking the job was spend as much time as possible with these guys, really start to develop some of those personal relationships. So, you know, not just about them as a player, but really about them as a person. And I think that's one of the most important pieces. And then as we start looking at the football side of things, you know, to be honest, I think that just mentioning to the kids, you know, when I first took the job, and that our expectations really aren't going to change. You know, I know that Derek had high expectations for these kids. I know that, you know, we at the high school, as far as an athletic staff, have a high expectation for these kids. And so really just trying to reiterate that all the same goals that they had when Derek was a part of this program, those goals are continue, and we're looking to have a high level of success. Speaking more specifically this year, you know, things we've talked to the kids about, number one, we want to go undefeated at home. I think protecting your home field is really important. We've got four games at home, and each one of those are kind of starred on the schedule and really important. Winning our conference, obviously, if we win our conference, that's going to put us in position to be a playoff team, which is a goal for us going into every single year. And, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing for us to talk about what the ultimate goal is. I think the kids were there last year. I think the kids played at UNH, obviously, and played really well, and they know what it's like to be a part of that special experience. I wouldn't want our groups to come into the season without having that ultimate prize in mind, you know? And so I think our kids are not shying away from that expectation and that goal, and that's something we're shooting for.
Well, Coach, it's fun to hear about those goals for the season. And of course, we've just wrapped up the preseason. As you've been getting to know the players and build those relationships, what are some of the highlights of the preseason for you so far?
Yeah, I guess I would just say that the general level of competition for our kids, and I mean competition within the program. You mentioned earlier about how many great football players we graduated. And so one of the pieces that comes along with that is trying to find the guys to replace them. And not only the fact, you know, that we have to find guys to replace them, but that there's a brand new head coach, and with a new head coach sometimes comes, you know, viewing some of the personnel differently. And so I think for a lot of our kids, it's been a clean slate. There's no preconceived notions. I didn't have any preconceived notions about people's abilities. And so it's really just taking that clear look at it and really what they do on the field and how hard they compete, and what they show us in the preseason is what we're going to base some of those decisions on come regular season time. And so I guess the biggest highlight for me has just been the way our kids have been competing and even competing with each other in the preseason. We have so many kids who just waited their turn and have been waiting for an opportunity to step on that field on a Friday night, you know, and represent the Bulldogs. And that competition has been great throughout the preseason. And hopefully that competition continues throughout the season, because all that does is make us better as a football team.
Yeah, Coach, we had fun watching the Bulldogs play in the Queen City Invitational against Salem last week, and a mixture of exciting plays offensively, defensively, special teams. How about that punt return that Menerson Ellie took to the house?
Yeah, I think anytime you can get a score on special teams or even a big play on special teams, I think that ignites the energy for your whole football team and really your whole football program, everybody on the sideline as well. So no doubt that was a special football play for us. I think coming into something like the Queen City Jamboree, you're hoping that you can kind of get that game energy out of that experience. You know, although everybody knows, okay, this is an exhibition situation, we're going to play a half of football, you're hoping that you can get some of those nerves and some of that nervous energy out of the way, so come Friday night, you're ready to go. But yeah, that was an absolutely exciting play, and there's no doubt we're looking for a lot more plays like that in the future.
Well, Coach, last one for you today. You mentioned that you were able to keep three of the coaches from last season on the staff this year. Tell us a little bit about the rest of your coaching staff.
Sure. So three coaches returning to the program this year. So that starts really at the top with our defensive coordinator, Sean Donahue, and he's been coordinating the defense here for a while now, and so that was, you know, that was one of the biggest pieces of putting the staff together, was, you know, bringing him back and keeping him in the fold. I think obviously the program has played defense at a very high level. And so as far as I'm concerned, you know, coming from the outside in, you you don't fix something that's not broken. And so definitely having Sean and then Matt and Donovan Murphy, who also were working on the defensive side of the ball last year with Sean, coming back, I think that allows us to have some stability within the program on the defensive side of the football, which is really exciting. Unfortunately, we had some staff members leave on the offensive side of the ball. And so, you know, going out and finding some new people was really important. So we brought in Josh Radisek, who actually played at Central, was a quarterback at Central back in the day. And he'll be working with our quarterbacks and working with us on the offensive side of the ball. And then a guy by the name of Ben Gambino, who will be working primarily with our offensive and defensive linemen.
Well, Coach, thank you so much. Again, this has been Coach Zach Matthews. We really appreciate your time today. And best of luck this season. And we look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me on. And again, I look forward to conversations as well.
All right. That was Coach Zach Matthews here on Bedford 105.1.
Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. This is segment five.
Number five.
Five, just so Harry gets to put them all together. I really do like that North Carolina soccer thing, so I'm going to post it to the Fox on Sports Facebook page.
Okay.
Which you can access literally just by typing into your browser foxonsports.com.
F-O-double-X.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can see it there. It is... According to the book that I'm slowly reading, basically the long and the short of it is a lot of this information the UNC soccer coach picked up along the way. And it was he'd read something here, read something there. But he's a guy who came at coaching after being a Division I athlete. And his father said something to him to the effect of, I've never seen somebody with no talent work so hard trying to become talented. You know, obviously he's been, I don't know how many Division I soccer titles that they've won, but it's well over 20 at this point. So it's a well-run program, and it's a program with a very strong culture. And I guess while we're thinking of it, and I don't want to, we'll get to our final topics shortly. I wanted to send our best wishes to Coach Sean McDonald at the University of New Hampshire, the football coach who is on medical leave for an undetermined or an undisclosed reason for an indeterminate amount of time. How's that? More words than I'm trying to string together. But I will tell you, having worked with the UNH football program earlier, 10 years ago, give or take, Coach Mack is one of the truly good guys in sports. He has that tough exterior that you expect for a coach to have. But he will really, truly do anything for his players, do anything for the program, even for lowly broadcasters, where I've told this story on the air before. He'd have me and Jim Janot come in when he's having his meetings with the officials before the game so that we can understand if they're in a funky formation, why he's doing what he's doing, and the level of trust. He didn't know me from anybody. The level of trust that he has with me to basically give me his game plan so that I can do a better broadcast. Not everybody does that. So just an all-around good guy. And I guess testament to that is the coach who's currently at the helm is Ricky Santos, who was the quarterback at UNH, record-setting quarterback back when. I really and truly hope that it's not a permanent change. And Coach Mack, we wish you all the best and all the positive vibes we can muster from here. Yeah, Ryan Toscano's on that team too. So
that's right.
Yeah, a lot of stuff for us to root for this year for those Wildcats. So, with that, all right, more football. You watched the game last night. Did you actually go home and watch it after softball?
Well, yeah.
Hey,
second half.
I was washing my dishes in a Home Depot bucket.
It was a lot to see in that second half. I saw my 3 points. It was so exciting.
What channel was it on?
NBC.
Okay.
Which is, it's funny you ask. When I turned it on, it was in Spanish. And I couldn't figure out why. I checked I checked if I was on some alternate NBC station, but I was on 810. They were broadcasting it in Spanish. I couldn't get it to change. I hit info, it hit guide, hit info, and it had the little symbols of, one of them was ENG.
Yeah.
So it apparently was in English, but it wasn't coming out in English.
Huh.
So I had to turn on my phone, go to the Xfinity app, and play the volume off the app so I could hear Michaels and Collinsworth speaking in English.
I'm going to give you the first rule of tech support. Did you turn it off and then on again?
No, because I was behind.
Yeah.
Ah. I didn't want to turn it off.
Look at you.
And,
you planned ahead.
Risk losing the video.
Okay.
So anyway, I mean, there wasn't much to talk about in terms of successful football plays.
No, if the NFL
whether it was English or Spanish.
If the NFL was like that, truth. If the NFL was like that all the time, they'd have a way harder time getting people to watch.
Yeah, and it's a shame because it's the opening game, 100th season, Packers and Bears, best rivalry in the NFL, and they got kind of a dud. And of course, a lot of the commentary now is, well, if Trubisky had taken more than three snaps in the preseason, where all of which were handoffs, you know, maybe the offense would be in a little bit better rhythm than to only put up 3 points at home in the opener. But they look like kind of a mess. And
so here's a thought, and I'll this is what I do. Like Hansen, like docks the boat, and I just go walking up and take the lines and like push the boat away from the dock and be like, hey, how are you going to get somewhere now? What if in NFL preseason, because everybody makes such a big deal of preseason, such a joke, and why are season ticket holders on the hook for these extra tickets, and why do they have to pay full price, whatever. What if they made it where it wasn't, where it was basically passing league, where it wasn't a full contact preseason, because you want the guys to get the opportunity to get reps with their team at full speed. So why don't you do a preseason where guys aren't, you know, helmet to shoulders or helmet to whatever, you know?
That is an option. I think that's part of what they do when they do those combined practices.
Yes.
Where the teams will be together for a few days and they'll scrimmage, and they certainly have less structure in those than the preseason games that are televised. I actually watched Bedford's preseason game. It was a scrimmage before the Jamboree in Manchester, which was more like a regular game with officials and a clock. And they had a scrimmage where it was much more relaxed, almost more like a practice with another team. There were officials, but they would blow the play dead. Like there was a fumble, the ball was loose, and the quarterback was running after it. A lineman from the other team was running after it. They blew the play dead so that you wouldn't potentially have an injury. So that might be a way to get guys more reps.
Right.
You know, then the question is, do they even want to show their plays with their starters? Who knows? But in any event, you know, the guys were a little bit rusty. It showed yesterday. But it's kind of funny that the only touchdown that was scored, I just showed you the play, Aaron Rodgers throws it up to Jimmy Graham. Really not a very good throw.
Not a really good anything. It was bad defense. It was kind of a soft route. There was a lot that looked funny when you saw it. And I guess, if this is Trubisky's first live action since January, I can understand.
Yeah, it's a long time.
It's 8 months.
It's a long time. It's disappointing, though, for I've always been a Bears fan because they invested so much to go and get him. Now he's in his third year, and he just does not look like a franchise quarterback who's going to be better than average.
No.
I mean, he's got the mobility. He's got above average legs for a quarterback, and he's tough, got a strong arm, but he just hasn't put it together and been that leader that you can look to and say, he's going to go make a play down the stretch. And so that was the other play we looked at is when he had the chance to tie the game late in the fourth, he lobs it up in the corner of the end zone and it gets picked off. And so not a good throw probably because it was into double coverage. But the thing that was funny to me is just comparing that throw to Rodgers' throw because Rodgers throws the jump ball. Jimmy Graham catches it for the touchdown, the only touchdown in the game. Trubisky throws the jump ball in the corner. Allen Robinson trips. The Packers intercept it. And so Rodgers and the Packers come out with a win. And the takeaway for me is just that you got to have your players make plays. And it takes two to tango on these throws. The quarterback puts it in position, but you got to have a receiver out there who's going to go out and make a play.
Well, and there is, of course, a size difference between Jimmy Graham, who's a tight end, and Allen Robinson, who's a wide receiver. Jimmy Graham is, what, 6'6"? And Allen Robinson, seeing how quickly I can find this, I know he's not 6'6".
He seems like he's maybe 6'1".
6'2", maybe. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a size difference. The other thing is Trubisky is making that throw, and the Packers had a good rush off the end that really hurried things up and made it so that he wasn't going to get everything he needed to on it. And he was also going to make a throw that, what down was that throw made on?
I think it was third.
Allen Robinson is 6'3".
Okay.
Okay, so it's third down at that point. So it's kind of a do or die. You sort of have to make that throw, but he's making that throw into double coverage. Like, there's not a whole lot of the probability for the people that are stat geeks. I would wager that the probability, if you were just looking at, okay, Rodgers, this situation, ball is thrown, probability of catch and touchdown is way higher on the Jimmy Graham one, independent of quarterback, than on the Allen Robinson one.
Yeah, and you're right. The two differences are Graham's height advantage and the fact that he was in single coverage.
Yep.
Trubisky didn't look off the safety, and they talked about that on a broadcast, so it allowed him to go over there and create double coverage, and so the odds of making that catch were a lot less. So that is where Rodgers had the better decision-making process, so to speak. Trubisky didn't. And again, bottom line is Trubisky just didn't – he didn't make the big play that they needed. And, you know, it was noteworthy then that Rodgers was celebrating with the defensive coordinator. He looked like a kid running around after that victory. And he's like a kid at Christmas now with – the new coaching staff, because it just was not working with McCarthy.
Correct.
And so just really a big game for that division. I mean, Packers, Bears, and Vikings, that's going to be a battle. So Packers have the early edge, and we're off and running here with the NFL.
It'll be interesting to see, too. And the other thing that was bizarre, we did our fantasy football draft Wednesday night, and it's always weird where you have the – last year it was Le'Veon Bell who – is he going to play or is he not? Somebody gambled with him and took him early, and he didn't play it down that year. And next thing you know, all right, that makes a big difference in fantasy draft. This year's version, I guess there were a couple for anybody who drafted before Wednesday. Ezekiel Elliott is one where, well, is he going to hold out the season? Is he going to be like Le'Veon Bell? We did our draft the evening that he signed, so you know there's going to be a couple weeks of ramp up for him, but it's really not a big deal for him to ramp up. He did the same sort of thing last year, even though he was with the team the whole time. And then the flip side of it is a guy whose production has been so consistent, Antonio Brown, who is going to get suspended, is, to use the expression, happy cows give good milk. Antonio Brown is not going to be happy if he gets suspended and he's got to give back $29 million of guaranteed money. And like, if you've listened to the show before, you know, or if you listen regularly, I'm sorry. You know, I'm a big fan of Antonio Brown. I love his enthusiasm. I love how he plays the game. I'm just really trying to figure out what is the end game of this whole mess.
Oh, seriously.
Like, why? Just like you got what you wanted. You got out of Pittsburgh. You're with John Gruden. You're with Derek Carr, who's a good, young, up-and-coming quarterback. You're with Josh Jacobs, who's a running back that we'll talk about in a little bit. But you have what seems to be a good situation. What's going on?
I know. This really is a big turning point, and it's really going to be fascinating to see how it plays out, because we just can't remember seeing anything like this, where you trade for perhaps the best receiver of the generation.
He's a generational talent. That was exactly what I was thinking.
In your first season with the new team, you have this string of drama, series of drama throughout the preseason where it's like first the helmet, the feet, the helmet. And then you feel like, all right, it's all behind him. He's back. He's practicing. His feet are going to be okay. And now this latest thing with the fines and then the altercation with the GM in front of the team. I mean, this is like really putting everybody at a crossroads. And where is this organization going to go? It's a huge decision. I can't wait to see what they do. I mean, I heard Drew Rosenhaus, Brown's agent, yesterday in an interview, and he really was taking the approach of trying to mend the relationship. And obviously, there's a lot at stake.
Well, he's
financially,
he's got a lot of skin in that game, too.
A lot. But he also said, you know, Brown wants to play. He wants to be on the field. To your point, I mean, that's why you like him so much as a player, because of that enthusiasm. He's a gamer.
He's fun. He's a little guy who's not afraid to go over the middle. But I almost look at some of this stuff and, as you're describing the feet, the helmet, and I've had this, the fog that is going with Antonio Brown is he's saying he doesn't want to play, but the only thing he's not saying is I don't want to play. He doesn't want to play.
He doesn't want to practice. It's clear that he did not want to be in training camp.
But I honestly, I don't know if he wants to play either.
I think he does.
And I have no, I don't know Antonio Brown. You look at all these little signals and you go, I don't know if his heart is in it. And again, not really a Steeler fan, not really a Raider fan. I'm in a dispassionate observer.
I think he wants to play in the games. He didn't want to go through a full training camp. He's got his contract. He'd rather just show up for week one. And that was what it was looking like it was going to be. But this is what's interesting to me is what the Raiders do here says a lot about where they want to go, because a lot of folks are picking them as a long shot Super Bowl pick because they've got this stud receiver. They've got this great running back, rookie running back, Josh Jacobs. Carr is, he's good enough if you put good weapons around him. So who knows? I mean, I don't think they're going to be a Super Bowl contender, but they're going to be they're going to have a lot more successful season if they have Antonio Brown on the field.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's going to be the challenge, is mending the fences with John Gruden, Mike Mayock, your teammates. This isn't in the 70s, and I may have referenced this before, Chuck Tanner's managing the Chicago White Sox, and guys are walking into Chuck Tanner's office and complaining because Richie Allen is showing up 15 minutes before the game, not taking BP, doing whatever he wants to do. And Chuck Tanner's response was, if you hit 300 with 30 homers and drive in 100, you can do that too.
Right.
Like, those days, in some ways, yeah, you can still get away with that stuff. And he's got a longer lead than most. But then there come, the Maginot line. There's come time, sometimes you cross it, and how many different references I'll make. The die is cast. Like, that's it. There's no going back.
And so that's what we're going to have to figure out, because you're right. You got to hold the culture together enough. You can make exceptions for players sometimes, but what's too far? So we'll see how they balance that out. What teams do you think are going to balance it out the best this season? What are your Super Bowl picks?
I don't know, man. I really have nothing of any value to add as far as NFL playoffs at this point, because you could make a strong case for parity is such in this league. You can make a strong case 2/3 of the teams have a shot, and injuries are such that, and the changes in the game, running back position, where running backs have become, I'm not going to say disposable, but they are to football what closers are to baseball, where the Denver Broncos were doing it 15 years ago, where it was, we can bring in Alandis Gary, and Alandis Gary is going to run for 1,700 yards. Terrell Davis is gone. Now it's Gary. Now it's next guy. Now it's next guy. Like, year in and year out, teams, they were doing that. And now teams, it seems like, have subscribed to that far more. And so it's, who's going to have the Philip Lindsay? Who's going to have that rookie running back that kind of coagulates their offense?
Well, that plays well into my prediction. I'll give you mine. You can.
You're going to do it quickly because we got like 30 seconds.
Yeah. So my Super Bowl prediction is Patriots over the Vikings. The Vikings.
Patriots again?
Yeah. Yeah.
The rest of the world is going to hate New England.
And you know what's amazing? When I looked at the standings, there's 16 teams in the AFC, and somehow the Patriots get to the Super Bowl almost every year. That's what's just amazing with the parity and the fact that there's 16 teams. But anyway, for the Vikings, they just have such an exciting offense with Cousins, Diggs, Thielen. Dalvin Cook didn't play a full season last year. If he does this year, that offense is going to be really tough to stop. They've got a great defense. You talk about rookie running backs, and I really like their backup, Alexander Mattison. And so I just think they're really well positioned, where even if Cook goes down again, they've got that system where they can plug Madison in, and I think they're going to be a real tough threat.
It's as logical as anything else at this point. We're the week after Labor Day, and this is why the NFL sort of controls everybody, is their ability to get us talking about something that's happening in February and September.
That's right.
So we got a lot between now and then. We got ice, we got snow, we got rain, and for the Patriots, they also have to deal with the fact that they have a quarterback who's not a whole lot younger than I am and is older than you are.
But a great schedule. They get to play twice against the Jets and the Bills and the Dolphins.
Truth. Sorry, Harry. Our thanks to our guests on the program, Zach Matthews, the Bedford High football coach, Michelle Winning, the Bedford High girls soccer coach, and thanks to everybody here at the station for everything that they do for us. Enjoy your sports week. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.